All right, go for it, Laura.
One was, you mentioned calcium or magnesium citrate with meals could help. Is there like a particular brand or supplement that you would recommend for that specifically?
You know, for me, as long as it's, because people will want to go and get the fancier calcium, but you just want to get the citrate, and as long as it's liquid or a powder that can be mixed in liquid, that is the only thing that really matters. So, no, I don't have a particular brand. Sorry, do you, Dr. Edemite?
Yeah, that's a really good point, though, the liquid versus capsule. So you're saying it should be liquid, which I always prefer anyway, just put it in the water. Is there a reason for that from your understanding of that?
Yeah, totally. Okay, because a lot of the time the capsules, especially with poor digestion, don't get broken down in the small intestine, which is where a lot of this dance with the oxalates happens.
Right.
And so they could be taking a capsule and it won't do anything. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so as far as brands then, if we're looking at a calcium citrate, I know Thorn has a calcium citrate, Pure Encapsulations. I just always go for our tried and true brands that don't add a whole bunch of junk into their stuff. And, you know, calcium citrate is fairly inexpensive. And you're taking it with the meal. And would you say beginning, middle, end of the meal, does it matter? My thought is beginning of the meal, but what's your experience with it?
Yeah, my thought is like with the first couple bites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And okay. I don't know this. I mean, before Laura gets us her second question, because this, I always think about like how much, so say for example of the spinach, right? Spinach has a lot of oxalate, but it also has a lot of calcium. And have you seen any studies that show, well, 80% of the spinach is bound to the oxalates is going to be eliminated, or 20% or 50%? Any research on that you've seen?
So I haven't seen anything quantitative. And after, like, I was, for a year, I was really frustrated. I'm like, how much of the oxalates are really a problem? And I really feel like it's just dependent on everything, like our stomach acid that breaks those apart, right? So for some of us, we're going to be leaving them all stuck together anyway, and those are going to be excreted. But for some of us, we're going to be breaking them down better. But then, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's really not really easily quantifiable is basically the answer.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Laura, I wish that, you know, a lot of things we wish were easily quantifiable, but they're not. So unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So Laura, what else? What other questions did you have?
This is really fascinating for me because I work a lot with women with pelvic pain and vulvodynia and interstitial cystitis. And I wanted to ask, one of the things that comes up a lot with my clients that have IC is they are noticing that, like, multivitamins set them off, or kind of how you mentioned, like, vitamin C will set them off or trigger bladder pain or pelvic pain flares. Do you have any recommendations for, like, a vitamin C that might not do that, or is it just best for them to avoid that in that situation? I was trying to find ways to support them without it increasing their pain.
Yeah, so I, too, was looking for that. And for people who you really do believe that the vitamin C is being converted to oxalates, there is no real form that is immune to this issue, unfortunately. And so for me, in that case, I usually go with the more natural foods that contain vitamin C, and try to rethink the supplement plan.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned that it's about 4 grams a day of vitamin C that becomes problematic, but like everybody we work with is individual, and some people may have a much lower threshold than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just really a matter of maybe even finding what their threshold is by just experimenting without the multi, without the C in it, and just giving them vitamin C and titrating up and just seeing at what level of vitamin C they have a problem, and then you can maybe look for supplements that have less of that or not do the multis and just do individual nutrients with the threshold amount or full threshold amount.
Totally. Yeah, so just because that's the amount that they found in that study.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. That was so interesting, especially – so many of, I think, pelvic pain and constipation kind of go hand in hand with pelvic floor dysfunction and everything that's going on with this. And it's fascinating to me because so many physicians are putting their pelvic pain patients on Miralax
talking about that. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is making their pelvic pain worse. Stop it. Stop it. Oh.
Absolutely.
But thank you. This, like, so many red flags and light bulbs were going off in my mind. This was so great stuff. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. And what was your thought on for following presentations, to do it this way or to do it never mind. I think we're just going to do it this way because we can separate out the questions. Thank you.
Yeah, I like it this way.
Yeah, I like it this way better. All right. So we had some in the chat. I know Sequoia had some questions and comments. Let's see. So Sequoia said, do you know if oxalates are associated with hang banging in other conditions in children apart from autism?
Absolutely. Like a lot of people, adults included, we can't really articulate or even necessarily feel what hurts at what given time. And so in any child that's doing those kind of repetitive, something with a body part, I'm thinking about, you know, if it's a body part that oxalates can build up in, like the vagina or the head or whatever, I'm looking into the oxalates, yes.
Okay, good. And then Sequoia had another one. Where in Canada do you get chestnut flower?
So, again, that's water chestnut flower. And water I do not know a source. Yeah,
okay.
I do not know a source in Canada, yeah.
Yeah, and she was concerned about that water chestnuts being contaminated with heavy metals.
Right. Yeah, that is a possibility. You know, I make a lot of flours in the Vitamix, or I do have a flour mill, you know, so I'll dehydrate stuff and then make it into flour, and that, to me, feels like the safest
way
to
do
things. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so buy water chestnuts at the Asian market and then dehydrate them and then grind them to a flour? Is that what you're saying? I mean, that's assuming
totally
use flour, right? So it's
right.
Just,
like, what do we put flour in?
Okay, really? I don't use flour at all. So really, do we need it? Like, and if the people who are just so addicted to their high oxalate flour, it just becomes one of those, like, it's a curiosity, and if it's available, it'd be a curious thing to buy and play with, but I don't know that people are going to go out of their way to try to make water chestnut flour. I've never seen it. So.
Exactly.
Interesting to find the source. Yeah.
Exactly.
We had a lot of great presentations from Sequoia and Gila. And let's see. Yeah. And Sequoia says best to go through and then do the Q&A. I kind of agree with that. I just have to sit on my mouth and just not talk. Because I have a few questions I want to throw in there. Yes.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay. One other thing I wrote down was... I wrote down about the horse tail, the antifreeze. I guess it was pretty much answered. It's just a comment that I usually want to just reinforce what you talked about was the fact that oxalate sensitivity is generally going to be a problem with people with leaky gut, right? In the normal person, the oxalates are going to be pulled out in the gut by whatever minerals you're having with it. If a person has leaky gut, they're going to get into the bloodstream. So it requires basically three components, right? High, a lot of oxalates, low minerals to bind, leaky gut, and then usually a genetic tendency to sensitivity to oxalates, you know, except in the cases of huge, huge amounts. But I'm saying with the normal amount of oxalates in a healthy, you know, high plant diet, the person that doesn't have any problems with those areas shouldn't have an issue. Like if somebody told me I had to go low oxalate, I'd probably, you know, shoot myself or something because I love my oxalate foods and I don't, you know, find an issue, but I work with people all the time that have severe oxalate sensitivities. And it's an awesome thing to know about, but really when we always want to get to the root, the problem or not the oxalates, it's the sensitivity of the oxalates because they're going where they're not supposed to go, getting into the bloodstream and being able to then form those crystals that deposit in different places in the body. Right? Yeah.
Right. And we're built to handle a certain amount of oxalates.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
personally, we're not meant to have leaky gut.
We're not meant to have leaky gut, but lots of us have. And with spinach, you know, we're not meant to eat 2 pounds of spinach a day. So that's why the rotate your greens, right? There's a lot of people who get in trouble because they go, green smoothies, yay, this is good. But spinach is a good green smoothie because it doesn't taste green. So I'm going to eat tons of spinach. And then if they do have leaky gut, they can go overboard and have a problem. So, and I know people that are super, uber, uber sensitive to it. I've worked with people who are super, uber sensitive to it. So it's something you just always have to have that in your repertoire of things to rule out or rule in. Cool. Yeah. Yay. I'm going to stop the recording for this one. I don't see any other hands up. So I'm going to stop the recording. I'll check the chat one more time. Oh, yes, yeah. Sequoia, what if you take the calcium magnesium citrates away from food? Don't they still bind up the oxalates? I'll let you handle that, and I'll give my opinion.
We want to bind them up in the gut so they don't get absorbed in the first place.
Right.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Right. Right. And, you know, it may, there may be some laxity or, you know, variability in how close to the meal, like, you know, depends on how far down it gets. But, you know, when you think about calcium, magnesium, they usually do get absorbed oftentimes up higher. And especially if you're taking them on an empty stomach, a liquid magnesium calcium citrate, without food, it could be those calcium and magnesium are just going to be absorbed. They're not going to be in the gut to be available to bind to the oxalates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Great questions. The binding, let's see. The binding is affected by your pH. And when you say pH, Sequoia, are you talking pH in your gut or are you talking pH in the overall pH, like the person is tends towards being more alkaline versus acid. So while she answers that, I'll check to see no more questions, and then I'm going to go ahead and check one other spot. Okay, and in the digestive system, so the pH of the digestive tract. Yeah, do you want to comment on that? The pH of the digestive tract affecting the binding.
Binding. Well, I mean, the pH of the digestive, the small intestine, affects this whole thing in so many different ways, from the bile production through to the mineral absorption, through to the mucosa, through to the bacteria that will be living in there, depending on the pH. So, yes, most certainly, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And I just want to just reinforce and reiterate what Steph said about the gallbladder, right? We see how many people do you see that have their gallbladders intact and how many people do you see that have them removed. There's a huge part of the population that's had their gallbladders removed or are suffering from that, what we call biliousness, right? That inability to digest the fat. So really thinking about that in terms of those folks is really an important piece to keep in mind.